The Drama of the Week is a download from the BBC. The Enchanted April by Elizabeth von Arnim, dramatised by Vivian Allen.
It began in a woman's club in London on a wet February afternoon when Lottie Wilkins, after a small lunch, was running her listless eyes down a column just inside the first page of The Times and saw the following. To those who appreciate wisteria and sunshine, small medieval Italian castle on the shores of the Mediterranean to be let furnished for the month of April. Necessary servants remain. Apply box 121, The Times. Lottie went over to the window and stared gloomily out. Not for her were such delights. Not for her the shores in April of the Mediterranean and the wisteria and sunshine. Such delights were only for the rich. She sighed, her thoughts turning unwillingly to her husband Mellersh and the fish she would have to get for his tea.
Excuse me. Are you reading about the medieval castle and the wisteria?
Why do you ask?
I was looking at it too. Well, it's such a miserable day, isn't it?
Yeah, indeed it is. This dreadful rain has hardly stopped all week. Oh, and I was looking at the advertisement. I mean, I've seen you before, haven't I?
Yeah, we live fairly close to one another. I'm Lottie Wilkins, and I know you to be Mrs. Arbuthnot.
Mr. Wilkins was a solicitor and encouraged thrift, except that branch of it which got into his food. He did not call that thrift. He called it bad housekeeping. You never know, he would constantly remind her, when there will be a rainy day, and you may be very glad to find you have a nest egg.
I was thinking how wonderful it would be to go there, to that Italian castle, to escape this awful weather.
Very wonderful. But it's no use wasting one's time thinking of such things.
Oh, but I believe it is.
You do?
Yes. I believe if one thinks hard enough about wanting something, anything can be possible.
In actual fact, Lottie had never believed any such thing. Until today, when the vision planted in her mind by that simple advertisement had expunged all logical thought.
Why don't we try and get it?
Get it?
Yes.
How do you mean, get it?
Take it.
Take it?
Rent it, hire it, have it.
You mean you and I?
Yes. Between us, share the cost.
But we don't know each other.
But just think how well we would if we went away together for a month. It's so funny. But I see us both, you and me, I really do. I see us this April in the medieval castle. Mrs. Arbuthnot.
Well, Rose, please, if we're to be friends.
Rose, I've never spoken to anybody before in my life like this. I really don't know what has come over me.
Rose looked uneasily at Lottie. Her excitement was certainly infectious, and a trip to Italy would be delightful. But there were many delightful things one would like to do, and didn't.
Shall we do it? Shall we? You and I?
Well...
Now, let's do it now. We can get a paper and an envelope from the reception desk.
The owner of the castle was an Englishman, a Mr. Briggs, who wrote, on receiving their inquiry, that it had beds enough for 8 people, 3 sitting rooms, battlements, dungeons, and electric light.
Oh, dear. Look at the rent. It's £60 for the month. It didn't occur to me it would be so much. The servants' wages are extra, and he wants references.
Of course he does. That's quite usual. As for the rent, we can advertise for some other ladies to join us.
Can we?
I don't see why not. It will cut our costs considerably.
Oh, but I've just thought. What will our husband say? Oh, Mellor should most probably sulk and not speak to me for days. But it's my nest egg after all, and I intend to do with it as I like. I expect your husband will be just the same.
Rose, who was obliged to live in the proceeds of her husband's activities, didn't answer, for Frederick would not be just the same. He would not mind in the least. He would be fully absorbed in the popular and somewhat racy novels he wrote, and which procured for him an extremely good living. The next day, Rose presented the owner with the entire £60. When he saw her, and her parted hair and soft, dark eyes, and heard her gentle, grave voice, he told her not to bother with references. Rose. Rose Arbuthnot. Pretty name.
Do sit down while I write out a receipt. Another nasty day, isn't it? You'll find the old castle has lots of sunshine, whatever else it hasn't got. Husband going?
Rose, evidently troubled by this question, began to murmur inarticulately, and the owner concluded she must be a widow. A war widow, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... Here you are. I hope you like it. In April, it's simply a mass of flowers. You'll see for yourself. And then there's the sea. You must wear white. I see you there in white among your portraits.
My portraits?
Madonnas. There's one on the stairs that looks just like you.
He held her hand for a minute at the door. The very feel of her hand, even through its glove, was reassuring. It was the sort of hand, he thought, the children would like to hold in the dark.
We've only had two responses. I'd hoped for more.
Two is perfect, Lottie. We'll still make the expenses much more manageable.
But I think a choice would have been a good thing, because then we needn't have had Lady Caroline Dester.
But why should we not have her?
I've never met anyone aristocratic.
What difference does that make?
You'll think I'm silly, but I might be a bit nervous of her.
Oh, Lottie. I'm sure you have no reason to be nervous. Seems really quite what we want. It will be best to interview her here at the club, don't you think?
Lady Caroline Dester was 28 and beautiful. She had inherited, in infancy, the nickname of Scrap, which had stuck to her ever since. Though it would be hard to imagine anyone looking less like a Scrap than Lady Caroline.
I believe there is to be a fourth?
Yes, Mrs. Fisher, a widow. She was unable to come here because she finds walking difficult without a stick.
Then how can she possibly go to Italy?
We rather wondered that ourselves, didn't we, Rose?
We did, yes. And we put it to her as delicately as we could. She told us rather tersely, in fact, that sitting in a train was not the same as walking about, and that was all she had to say on the matter.
Later that day, Rose and Lottie set off in search of Mrs. Fisher at her large and rather gloomy house in Prince of Wales Terrace.
Excuse me, but that photograph, I'm sure I know the face.
That is Matthew Arnold. My father was a critic and well acquainted with the literary men and women of the day.
And the little girl beside him?
It was me, of course.
And the pencil drawing over there, a little to the left of the Turner. Original?
Do you mean the drawing or the Turner? They are both original. The drawing is of Tennyson. Dear man, he used to like to pull my pigtails.
You knew Tennyson?
Well, I must have done, or how would he have been able to pull my pigtails?
Did you know Keats?
I'm afraid I did not know Keats. I did not know Shakespeare, either.
Oh, of course. How ridiculous of me. It's because the mortals still seem to live on, don't they? As if they are there, about to walk into a room. I really did think I saw him the other day. In Hampstead. Crossing
Lottie turned red, fidgeted, and carried on incoherently, driven on by Mrs. Fisher's bemused look over her glasses. It was at this point that Mrs. Fisher asked for references. She had no wish to be shut up for a month with someone who saw things. It would be extremely disagreeable if, for instance, Lottie Wilkins were to assert that she saw Mr. Fisher. Mr. Fisher was dead. Let him remain so. She had no wish to be told he was suddenly walking about the garden.
But aren't we the ones who ought to ask for some from you?
In answer, Mrs. Fisher wrote down three names: the President of the Royal Academy, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and the Governor of the Bank of England.
I'm afraid references do bring an atmosphere into our holiday plan that isn't quite what we want. We won't take yours up, and we won't give you any ourselves. So perhaps you won't wish to join us.
Very well. Let us waive references.
On the third Sunday in March, Lottie made up her mind to tell Mellish that she had been invited to Italy. They had just finished dessert, and Mellish was puffing on his customary cigar.
Mellish?
That apricot tart was delicious.
Yes. Mellish?
I'm thinking of taking you to Italy, Freestone. Lottie? Did you not hear me?
Oh dear. This really is an extraordinary coincidence.
How so?
Really most extraordinary. You see, I was just about to tell you that a friend has a house there and has, invited me to stay with her.
What? Over Easter?
Yes, dear.
In Italy?
Yes.
Who is this friend in Italy? I've never heard you speak of any.
Rose. Rose Arbuthnot. And she doesn't live in Italy. She lives in London. She just has a house there.
I've never heard you speak of her.
She belongs to my club, that's all, and we sometimes have lunch together.
And I never thought I would find myself saying this to you, but I think you would rather do anything and say anything than come away with me, your husband. Extraordinary coincidence. But is that all right? It is a very extraordinary coincidence indeed.
My friend is Rose Arbuthnot, and I'm not going to cancel my trip with her to Italy.
With her?
Yes, with her. I've just said her home is here in London. Our plan is to travel there together. I'm sorry, Mellersh. If you had asked me first, then it would have been quite different.
Oh, would it? Well, let me tell you, Lottie, I will not suspend my disbelief until I have proof of what you say.
After many impassioned pleas from Lottie, Rose was brought round to the Wilkins home with great reluctance to face Mellersh Wilkins and say things which were short of the truth. Rose encountered no such problems with Frederick. He was already planning his next racy novel and merely told her to enjoy herself. Domenico, the gardener at San Salvatore, had come to meet them at Mezzago and grabbed at their suitcases before they had time to ascertain who he was. But on discerning the word San Salvatore, they hurried after him, stumbling across rails and over puddles, to where in the road a small, high fly awaited them.
Do you know any Italian?
No.
Do you?
I'm afraid not.
Oh, dear. We hadn't thought of that, had we? And if we ever reach San Salvatore...
San Salvatore, sì, pronto.
In one piece, it would be a miracle. Oh, have you dared look down? There is nothing on our left, nothing at all, except the sea hundreds of feet below us.
In this way, they continued, swaying, heaving, clattering and clinging, till they reached a rise in the road and the horse stopped suddenly, throwing Rose, Lottie and suitcases into a heap, and then proceeded up at the slowest of walks.
No, no, San Salvatore.
Sì, sì, San Salvatore.
This can't be San Salvatore.
No, I don't think it can be.
What are we going to do? They've got our suitcases. Do you think that we're in danger? Rose, do you think these men are wicked?
I'm sure if they were wicked, they wouldn't bother to put umbrellas up for us.
Oh.
But I think they want us to get out.
After a short walk, blundering through the darkness, trying not to slip on wet paving slabs, they came to some steps that ended in a steeply sloping path. A black shape like a high wall towered above them, and trailing sprays of scented things caught at them and shook raindrops on them. Then, when they reached the bottom of the path, Domenico raised a lantern towards a dark mass curving around the water of the Italian Riviera.
San Salvatore.
San Salvatore.
Sì. San Salvatore.
It was a great, wonderful moment. Their medieval castle. Here it was, at last. When Lottie woke next morning, she lay in bed a few minutes before getting up and opening the shutters. All the radiance of April in Italy lay at her feet. The sun poured in on her with the sea lying asleep in its golden cradle. At the bottom of the flower-starred grass slope from which the wall of the castle rose up, a cypress tree cut through the delicate blues and violets and rose colours of the mountains beyond, like a great black sword. Lovely scents came up to the window and caressed her, and a tiny breeze gently lifted her hair. Far out in the bay, a cluster of almost motionless fishing boats hovered like a flock of white birds on the tranquil sea. She dressed in a hurry and then went to look for Rose. There was much to be done that day, settling in and arranging the rooms.
Rose, isn't it wonderful?
They would make it all so lovely for their two companions. Arm in arm, they went out into the garden, where they saw, sitting on a low wall, gazing out over the bay, Lady Caroline. She was full in the sun, her feet dangling among the flowers.
She ought to have a headache, sitting in the sun like that. She ought to have a hat. I didn't realise you were so pretty.
Scrap stared at Lottie. She wanted to be left alone to lie in the sun and not be spoken to. She had been so comfortable sitting on the wall. Now she would have to get off and leave. It really was such a nuisance.
Have you had breakfast yet?
Yes, in my room. Perhaps I'll see you later.
As she drifted elegantly away across the garden, Rose and Lottie had no idea they had been snubbed, and arm in arm they returned inside. Francesca, the elderly parlourmaid, showed them into the dining room, where, to their surprise, Mrs. Fisher was already seated at the head of the table.
We had no idea you had already arrived.
Well, as you see, I have.
We'd wanted to be here to welcome you.
This was the one, Mrs. Fisher remembered, who had said she had seen Keats. She must be careful with her. Curb her from the beginning.
Can you smell the freesias? Aren't they glorious? They're simply everywhere. How is the egg, Mrs. Fisher?
It's quite satisfactory.
I hope your room is comfortable.
Yeah, it is. More coffee?
No, thank you. Will you?
No, thank you. There were two beds in my bedroom, filling it up unnecessarily. I had one taken out. It has made it much more comfortable.
Oh. Is that why I have two beds in my room?
I gave no directions as to the placing of the bed. I merely asked Francesca to remove it.
I believe that's what must have happened. My room is rather small for two beds.
I have two in my room as well.
Your second one must be Lady Caroline's. She had hers removed too.
I don't see any use in extra beds if one hasn't got husbands to put in them.
Lottie's remarks seemed to Mrs. Fisher persistently unfortunate. In the 80s, when Mrs. Fisher had flourished, loose talk about husbands was never encouraged, and beds, if they had to be mentioned at all, were approached with caution.
Mrs. Arbuthnot, do let me give you a little more coffee.
No, thank you. But won't you have some more?
No, no, indeed. I never have more than two cups at breakfast. Have you had all you want?
Quite. Have you?
This habit of answering a simple question with the same question would have to be curbed, thought Mrs. Fisher. No one could live for a month in any real comfort with someone who had a habit.
Then shall we go?
Oh, let me help you.
Thank you. No, no, I can manage perfectly. It's only sometimes that my stick prevents me.
Are you coming, Lottie?
Not yet. I'm going to have one of these gorgeous oranges. How can you resist them?
Mrs. Fisher moved towards the door rather quickly for someone with a stick. She had no intention of being left with that odd Mrs. Wilkins, who was much too excitable for her liking.
What time would you like to have lunch?
Lunch is at 12:30.
You shall have it at 12:30, then. I'll tell the cook. It will be a bit of a struggle with the language, I mean, but I've brought a little Italian dictionary with me.
The cook knows.
Oh?
Lady Caroline has already told her. She speaks Italian.
But that's wonderful. We'll have positively nothing to do here, either of us, except just to be happy.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And Mrs. Fisher, leaving without answering her, said to herself, that woman really must be curbed.
Rose, you seem a little preoccupied. Is something wrong?
Everything is being taken out of our hands. She dislikes things her way.
Well, she shouldn't. She and Lady Caroline, both of them arrived before us, claimed the best rooms, removed their spare beds into the only remaining rooms, the ones left for us, the smallest ones. Mrs. Fisher needs to be reminded, Lottie, that we are not her guests. She's ours.
I don't mind my small room. I don't mind a bit.
But we found San Salvatore. And it is rather silly that Mrs. Fisher should behave as if it belonged only to her.
What is rather silly is to mind about it. Wisteria and sunshine. Remember, Rose? Have you ever seen such beauty?
Lottie,
I don't believe I have.
The wisteria was tumbling over itself in its excess of flowering, and the sun blazed down on geraniums and nasturtiums in great heaps of bright, fierce reds and oranges and yellows, all mingling with blue and purple irises and lavender bushes. Behind them, the ground dropped away in terraces to the sea, each terrace a little orchard where among the olives grew vines on trellises and fig trees and peach trees and cherry trees. The trees were in blossom, making lovely showers of white and red among the trembling delicacy of the olives and the fig leaves, which were just big enough to smell of figs.
Mrs. Fisher doesn't seem happy, does she? She will begin to be soon. You'll see. I'm not sure, Lottie, that people begin to be anything after a certain age.
Scrap, sitting where they had left her before breakfast, peeped over when she heard their laughter, and seeing them on the path below, thought what a mercy it was that they were laughing down there and had not come up and done it round her.
Scusi, signorina.
What do you want, Francesca?
Oh, signorina, per favore, what Constanza cook for you for lunch?
I have already ordered lunch, so you had better go, or lunch will certainly not be ready by 12:30.
These curt words came out sounding so sweet that Francesca felt as if kind compliments were being paid her, and went away all gratitude and smiles into the dining room, where Mrs. Fisher was in her customary seat at the head of the table.
I have never cared for macaroni. It is slippery and difficult to eat, and it slides off the fork.
Signora, I think I should go for the young lady.
Why? She knows lunch is at 12:30. They all know.
The war had finished Scrap. It had killed the only man she had loved, the only man she had felt safe with, the only man she would have married. It had left her embittered, and a deep cynicism had taken hold of her. She wanted nothing more to do with love.
Oh, is there no peace anywhere?
Signorina, the macaroni, she get the cold. You come now.
No, I do not come now.
She must be ill, thought Francesca, sympathetic but unable to stop smiling at the appearance of the little creases appearing on the smooth brow. Scrap, sensing herself being adored, squirmed and shut her eyes. Shortly after, on hearing from Francesca of Scrap's apparent illness, Rose and Lottie hurried out into the garden.
We hear you're not well.
I have a headache.
Do you think some tea would do you good?
No.
Not even a little?
No.
I expect what would really be best for her is to be left quiet.
Scrap opened one eye just enough to peep through and see who was speaking. It was the freckled one. The dark one, then, was the one with the hand on her forehead. She waited, motionless and dumb, until Rose finally took her hand away, and she was left in peace once more.
I can't persuade her to have even a little tea. Do you know what aspirin is in Italian?
The proper remedy for headaches is castor oil.
But she hasn't got a headache.
Thomas Carlyle suffered from headaches, and he took castor oil as a remedy. He took it almost to excess and called it, I seem to remember, the oil of sorrow. My father said it coloured his whole philosophy, but that was because he took too much. What Lady Caroline wants is one dose and one dose only. It is a mistake to keep on taking castor oil.
But she hasn't got a headache. She only wants to be left alone.
Then why should she say she has?
Because she's trying to be polite. Soon she won't try when the place has got more into her. She'll really be it, without trying. Do you see?
Mrs. Fisher did not see, and did not understand this curious point of view. But it was, after all, Mrs. Fisher thought, typical of Mrs. Wilkins to talk in riddles. And so there was nothing for it but to go and find out for herself.
I hear you are not well. I expect the journey has upset you. What you want is a good dose of some simple medicine. I know you're not asleep. If you were, your cigarette would not still be held between your fingers.
Scrap threw her cigarette over the parapet and fixed her eyes on Mrs. Fisher with what she felt to be an indignant stare, but appeared to Mrs. Fisher as rather charming docility.
You must not neglect what may very well turn into an illness. We are in Italy, you know, and one has to be careful. You ought, to begin with, to go to bed.
I never go to bed.
I'm sure you will do what is reasonable, what is best for you, what your mother would want. You do have a mother.
It hadn't occurred to Scrap that there were people who had never heard of her mother, a marchioness. Her father, too, had been prominent, but his day was over because in the war he had made some important mistakes, and besides, he was now quite old. Perhaps the great name of Desta, which twisted in and out of English society, meant nothing to the others either, and it cheered her up considerably.
If I were your mother, I would want you to go to bed and get well.
I am well.
Then why did you send a message that you were ill?
I didn't.
Then I've had all the trouble of coming out here for nothing.
The sweet smells that were everywhere in San Salvatore came through the French windows into the sitting room from the flowers on the battlements and met the ones from the flowers inside the room. Who could be selfish or angry, thought Lottie, in the middle of all this beauty? But then Mrs. Fisher appeared and, leaning on her stick, found a good deal more to try her patience.
Oh.
Isn't it a delightful room? I'm writing to Mellersh, my husband, to let him know I arrived safely.
And you are using my personal property to do it. My notepaper and my pen.
Oh, it's yours. I'm very sorry.
I should have thought you could see that this is my room.
But this is a sitting room for the use of all of us.
There are others.
Well, that may be so.
No, I am an old woman and I need a room to myself. I cannot get about because of my stick. Why should I not sit quietly and undisturbed, as I told you in London I intended to?
We're only too glad for you to have this room if it makes you happy. We didn't know about it, that's all. We wouldn't have come in if we had.
Come on, Rose.
Picking up her letter, Lottie took Rosie's hand and drew her towards the door.
Poor old thing.
She's a very rude old thing.
Well, we did choose her room to go and sit in. It isn't her room. She claimed it because it's the nicest, and it's the only one that opens out onto the battlements.
But there are other rooms, and she's such a poor old thing. Let her have the room. What does it matter?
You're too kind to her. She isn't kind to you.
I'm just happy, that's all. It's because of being here. Don't you feel it too?
Rose was happy herself, but not anything like as happy as Lottie. For not only did she want to fight Mrs. Fisher, but she wanted something else. Something more than this lovely place. Something to complete it. She wanted Frederick. She yearned for her husband. Together, the two young women walked down to the village to post the letter to Mellersh. On the way, Lottie appeared to want to say something.
Oh.
Then, with a heavy sigh, fell silent.
Yes, Lottie? What?
I've been thinking about Mellersh. All this coming away and leaving him. He had been planning to take me to Italy for Easter himself. I didn't tell you that. He was angry and hurt. I think he had every reason to be. Rose, I've invited him to come and stay with us.
Rose, seeing a seat at the end of the path, suddenly had to sit down.
But the whole idea of our coming here was to get away, wasn't it?
I know. It seems idiotically illogical. I can't seem to help it.
Rose understood how Lottie felt, for she secretly wanted to ask Frederick to come too. But knowing that if he answered at all, it would be a hurried scribble with perfunctory thanks for her letter.
Lottie, if you don't mind, I won't come any further with you. I think I want to think.
All right. But don't think too long. Write and invite him at once.
Invite whom?
Your husband.
At the evening meal, which was the first time the four of them sat round the dining room table together, Scrap appeared in one of those wrappers or tea gowns, which is sometimes described as ravishing, and this one was no exception.
What a beautiful dress.
Mm. Oh, yes.
I've had it 100 years.
You must be very cold in it.
Not at all. I've had the most wonderful day.
Oh, God, thought Scrap, reaching for the Chianti. She's going to gush.
You're drinking rather quickly.
Am I?
We haven't yet finished the fish.
But Scrap wasn't listening. She had turned her attention to something Lottie was saying. And what was she saying? She had invited a man to come and stay.
What is his name?
Wilkins.
Wilkins?
Yes.
Your name?
And his.
A relation?
Not blood.
A connection?
A husband.
That Mrs. Wilkins, thought Mrs. Fisher. There was always something about the things she said. A husband. Suggesting one of many. What a silly way to talk.
We arranged, didn't we, in London, that if any of us wanted, we could each invite one guest.
I don't remember that.
Well, we did. Didn't we, Rose? Rose.
Oh, what were we saying?
I was reminding Mrs. Fisher that we agreed we could invite a guest if we wanted to.
Yes, we did.
It seems so incredible that one could ever want to. One's whole idea was to get away from people.
Yes, but now that I'm here and so happy, I find I don't want to shut him out. I want Rose to invite her husband too. You and Mrs. Fisher haven't got husbands, but you could invite friends, and we could all have a truly glorious time.
There is only one unoccupied bedroom in this house.
Only one? Then who are in all the others?
There are six bedrooms. We have four. Francesca has the fifth, and the sixth is empty.
So that however kind we feel we would be if we could, we can't.
What a problem.
What is?
Where to put Mellersh?
Isn't one room enough for him?
Yes, but then there wouldn't be any rooms left for someone you might want to invite.
I shan't want to.
Am I to understand that you propose to reserve the one spare room for the exclusive use of your own family?
He isn't my own family. He's my husband. You see...
No, I see nothing. At most, I hear, and that is with a good deal of reluctance.
Well, if nobody wants that room, and wouldn't use it anyhow, I shall be very glad if Mellersh may have it.
Of course, he must have it.
I have a friend, Kate Lumley. I wish to invite her to join me.
That settles Mellersh, then.
But I see him here.
The uneventful days, only outwardly uneventful, slipped by in floods of sunshine, and the servants, watching the four ladies, came to the conclusion there was very little life in them. The air was so still that it held its breath, and the light was so golden that the most ordinary things were transfigured and transported into that delicate warmth. The result was a deathly stillness in the house, except at mealtimes. The old lady sat in her room alone. The dark-eyed lady wandered off alone to loiter among the rocks. The very beautiful, fair lady lay in her low chair alone in the top garden. And the less, but still beautiful, fair lady went up into the hills alone where she would remain for hours. And every day the sun blazed slowly around the house and disappeared at evening into the sea. And nothing at all had happened.
Will you have more tea?
No, thank you. Will you?
You are too late for tea.
I know.
Hello. Oh, I've had the most wonderful time.
She is too late for tea.
I can see you forgot your hat.
I did get rather hot.
You should look in the mirror.
Why?
Your face is red and freckly.
I already have freckles.
You have more now.
Has the letter gone?
What letter?
Asking her husband here.
Mrs. Fisher looked up. Another husband? Was there to be no end to them?
Who is your husband?
Who should he be, except Mr. Arbuthnot?
I mean, of course, what is Mr. Arbuthnot?
And Rose, gone painfully red at this, said after a tiny pause,
My husband.
Mrs. Fisher was incensed. She couldn't have believed it of this one with her decent hair and gentle voice, that she too should be so impertinent.
Excuse me, I have to write a letter.
That first week, the wisteria began to fade. The rose-coloured blossom of the peach trees fell off and carpeted the ground, and the freesias disappeared along with the irises as the double Banksia roses came out and flaunted themselves gloriously on the walls and trellises. And by the end of the week, too, Mr. Wilkins arrived.
You must be tired after travelling all through the night.
What I really want is a bath. I take it there is a bathroom here.
Yes. It's the first room on the left along the landing, but there's...
Having a bath at San Salvatore involved the attendance of the servants to keep the boiler at an even temperature. Too hot, and it would rumble dangerously. And too low, the light would go out. The water would also have to be regulated. If the tap were turned on too full, it would instantly run cold. And if not full enough, the boiler could blow up inside and cause a flood. Mr. Wilkins leapt out of the bath and rushed to the door, and only the instinct born of years of training made him snatch up a towel. Scrap, halfway across the landing at the time, heard the explosion. Good heavens, she thought, remembering the instructions. There goes Mr. Wilkins. She was about to call for the servants when he rushed out and they ran into each other.
Gambath!
Here was an introduction. Mr. Wilkins, imperfectly concealed in his towel, his shoulders exposed at one end and his legs at the other.
How do you do?
How do you do? Please excuse me. I'm afraid I've just used the most unpardonable language.
I thought it most appropriate.
It is Lady Caroline Dester, is it not, to whom I'm speaking?
Yes.
Please allow me to introduce myself. My name is Mellows Wilkins.
Well, I thought perhaps it was.
The servants, when they heard the dreaded noise, knew at once what had happened and rushed straight into the bathroom to try and staunch the flood. But Mrs. Fisher did not know what the noise could be, and coming out of her room to inquire, stood rooted in the doorway. Mr. Wilkins, nothing if not courteous, bowed to the elderly lady, then crossed over to her, his wet feet leaving footprints as he went, and having got to her, he politely held out his hand. The strange effect of this incident was that when they met that evening at dinner, both Mrs. Fisher and Lady Caroline had a singular feeling of secret understanding with Mr. Wilkins. There was a sense of broken ice. They were acquainted with Mr. Wilkins's legs.
You've done the impossible.
I have.
You've charmed Mrs. Fisher.
Well, she's a charming lady.
Usually she isn't, and you made her smile. I've never seen her smile. She's very dour, and if she speaks at all, it's to complain about something. I'm so glad you're here with me to enjoy this enchanting place.
With the bathroom that blows up.
Well, I did try to warn you. Why are you looking at me like that?
You caught the sun. It's very becoming. And you've got freckles all round your nose.
I've always had freckles. I've just got more now.
The sun has caught your hair too. And put gold in it.
Mellersh was seeing his wife, properly seeing her, as when they had first met. As they sat together on an ancient stone bench under the battlements, an anxious-looking Francesca had come into another part of the garden and was hurrying towards Mrs. Fisher.
Signora Fisher!
Well, what is so important? I'm trying to write a letter.
It's 1 week now.
What is 1 week now?
Oh, the bill.
Well, I don't know why you should come to me. You'll have to see Lady Caroline. I speak hardly any Italian.
Scusi?
Lady Caroline, Parlare, Lady Caroline.
Ah, sì. Grazie.
With the sudden reminder of the expenses intruding on Mrs. Fisher's concentration, she set off herself in search of Lady Caroline.
Ah, so, here you are.
Yes, here I am.
Francesca is looking for you. She has presented the bill for the first week.
Why does she look for me? I'm not paying it. Lottie deals with the bills and then we pay our share to her.
Yes, but you are the only one who speaks Italian well enough to explain it to Francesca.
Mellersh continued to marvel at Lottie. During their marriage, he had not noticed the gold fading from her hair or her gradual fading into the background of his busy life.
I was so horrible. Leaving you like that. I thought of hardly anything else ever since. I felt so guilty.
You mustn't. I've done a lot of thinking of my own. and I deserved it.
No.
Yes, I did, Lottie.
Signora Wilkins, I scusi.
Does this good lady want something?
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten. Money.
Money?
The housekeeping bills.
Oh. Well, you have nothing to do with those.
I'm afraid I have. Francesca, I talk to you later.
Oh, si, signora.
I've lied to you, Mellosh. I made up the story about Rose having a house in Italy, and I encouraged her to lie as well. I wanted so much to come here. So you see, you were right not to believe me. But the rest of it was true. The coincidence, that part was true. You have every right to be angry. But I do hope you won't be. I hope you'll forgive me instead.
What could be more beneficial for both of us than such a holiday as this?
It was wonderful how Mellosh took it. He just accepted everything. He had not even minded the dreadful fibs. Wonderful. He had become what she always knew he was, underneath it all, a treasure. What Lottie didn't know was that when she mentioned Lady Caroline Dester in her letter, Mellosh had come to San Salvatore because of the Droitwiches. He knew all about their affairs, and even if they did not need his services, their daughter might, and there were possibilities too with Mrs. Fisher. But now that he was here, it was not just because of any legal opportunities the Droitwiches and Mrs. Fisher might present. It was because of Lottie and the gold that had returned to her hair. The next morning, Francesca, having cleared the table after breakfast, was still fretting about the unsettled bill when Mrs. Fisher came into the kitchen.
The bill? Let me see it.
But you say I see the signorina. In the signorina, she say I see the signora Wilkins.
Yes, and now I wish to see it myself. Good gracious. Well, this is much too much. You have been extremely extravagant.
Signora?
Are you going out?
I want to find Lady Caroline.
May I assist in the search?
She usually sits in that corner behind the bushes. She's been letting the bills run up in the most terrible fashion and needs a good scolding.
Lady Caroline? What has Lady Caroline, if I may inquire, to do with the bills here?
Well, the housekeeping was left to her because she speaks some Italian.
Lady Caroline? Housekeeping for a party that includes my wife? Do you not know that she is the daughter of the Droitwiches?
Oh, is that who she is? Well, that accounts for it. The muddle that man Droitwich made in the War Department on a matter involving public funds was a national scandal.
But surely to expect the daughter of the Droitwiches...
The Droitwiches are neither here nor there. Duties undertaken should be performed. Ah, so here you are.
Yes, here I am. Again. Now what?
I've been looking at the household bills for the week. You ought to have told me you were not doing it.
Not doing what?
Organising the expenditure.
I didn't know you thought I was.
Ladies, if I may make a suggestion, I would advise you not to spoil a delightful holiday with worries over housekeeping. Why not allow the cook so much ahead per day and tell her that for this sum she must cater for you?
And this week that has just passed... The exorbitant bills of this first week. What about them?
They shall be my present to San Salvatore.
Of course, if you choose to throw your money about.
Scrap smiled and lit a cigarette, and it seemed that from Mrs. Fisher there was the smallest hint of a smile returned. And so the second week began, and all was harmony. The beautiful golden days were dropping gently one by one, equal in beauty with those of the first, and the scent of the bean fields in flower on the hillside behind the village came across to San Salvatore whenever the air moved. In the garden that second week, the narcissus disappeared out of the long grass at the edge of the zigzag path, and wild gladiolus, slender and rose-coloured, came in their stead.
Rose, have you...
Not yet.
You don't know what I was going to say.
But considering you ask me every day, I think I do.
You're going to ask me if I'd written to Frederick yet.
And still you don't do it.
Why on earth not?
Because, Lottie, I'm frightened that he might not reply. And even if he does, I think he still won't come.
Miracles are happening in this place, Rose. If they can happen for Mellersh, then why not Frederick? Write to him. Just do it.
I see now that I've been foolish and wrong. I've never supported him in his writing, Lottie. More than that, I've been embarrassed by it. You see, he writes books about... Well, I would hardly describe them as high literature. He writes about women in history who were the mistresses of kings. His last one was about that Dubarry woman. It's hugely successful, and he bought me a sofa out of the proceeds. He thought I'd be pleased with it, but I wasn't. I hated it. It was deep red velvet, and I thought it was vulgar. I can see now that it has been me all along who has made him so... so remote. It's all very clear now. Yes. I will write. And then we shall be completely happy.
On that first day of the third week, Rose wrote to Frederick. And having done it, she wished she hadn't. He wouldn't come. A gentle melancholy swept over her once again.
I have a confession to make.
Oh, dear, not another one.
It seems rather funny now. But before you came, I wanted to put you in the spare room. Hmm? Not because I didn't want you with me. I did, very much. And even though I wanted you here more than anything, I was nervous.
Nervous of me?
No, well, not directly. Oh, dear, I'm not making much sense. I felt at the time it would be better if we had separate rooms. I was nervous of how we would be with one another. And this is such a small room. Anyway, Mellersh, I don't feel like that anymore. And I'm glad that you and Mrs. Fisher get on so well. She's such a poor old thing. She likes and respects you.
I must say I'm becoming almost fond of her, too. She has a fascinating history and becomes quite animated when she talks of her childhood among the famous literary figures of the day. I get the impression that she has troubles of some sort.
She's lonely. And she hasn't got love.
Love? Surely, my dear, not her age.
No, not just romantic love. There are other kinds of love. And you know, Mellersh, here in this beautiful place, I think Mrs. Fisher must feel it particularly keenly. Not having love, I mean.
What's the matter with Mrs. Arbuthnot? You must have noticed how quiet she's been these past few days.
She wants her husband.
Ah, very proper.
One does.
Does one?
Of course.
A day or so later, while Lottie and Scrap were off on another jaunt, and Mrs. Fisher had taken a book to her part of the garden, Mr. Wilkins went off in search of Rose and found her coming up the old stone steps.
Rose, a telegram has come for you.
I've been waiting. That is, I hoped. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh.
Not bad news, I hope.
Oh, no. Quite the contrary. I'm going to have a visitor.
The telegram had been sent that morning from Metzago and read, "Am passing through on way to Rome. May I pay my respects this afternoon? Thomas Briggs."
Who is Thomas Briggs?
He's the owner of this house. He's very nice.
Thomas Briggs was at that very moment jogging along the road between Metzago and Castagneto in a fly, sincerely hoping that the dark-eyed lady would grasp that all he wanted was to see her, and not at all to make sure that all was well with his house.
Oh, Signor Briggs, benvenuto.
Grazie, Francesca. Tutto bene.
Oh, sì, grazie.
On entering the hall, he looked up at the sound of footsteps. And there she was, coming down the stairs. And she was wearing white, just as he'd hoped she would be. In a moment, she would be level with her portrait. The portrait of the Madonna.
Wait. Just stand there like that. Just for a moment. Yes.
quite astonishing. You do see how extraordinarily alike you are.
I didn't know I looked so solemn.
You don't. Not now, but you did a moment ago.
The Signora Fisher, she says she will be pleased to see you.
Who is the Signora Fisher?
There are four of us sharing your house. My friend and I found we couldn't afford it by ourselves. Mrs. Fisher is having coffee in the top garden. I'll take you to her and introduce you.
You're wearing a hat. Were you going for a walk?
I was, yes.
I'd like to come with you, if I may.
But the Signora Fisher...
The Signora Fisher will keep, won't she?
Yes, I think she'll keep quite well till tea.
And will you invite me to tea?
Even though it was his own house, Briggs had never had tea in the garden. It was extremely pleasant, and he thought Mrs. Fisher a dear old lady. And at one time, she even called him dear boy and laughed. Rose was astonished. Not once before had she or any of the others heard Mrs. Fisher laugh. What an indictment of them all. Nobody had cared whether she laughed or not, except Lottie. She suddenly wanted to say something nice to the old lady when she saw Mr. Briggs's bright blue eyes fixed upon her.
What are you thinking about?
I can't very well tell you that, Mrs. Arbuthnot. Perhaps someday.
Mr. Briggs, I'm sure you have no thoughts we may not hear.
Then, dear lady, I would be telling you every one of my secrets in a week.
Oh, well, your secrets would be safe with me.
In which case, you should tell me yours. Oh. That would be fair, would it not?
I must protest. I really must. I have a prior claim. I am the older friend. Oh. I have known Mrs. Fisher 10 days, and you have not yet known her one. I assert my right to be told her secrets first. That is, if she has any, which I beg leave to doubt.
Oh, haven't I?
Then I shall worm them out of you.
Well, they won't need much worming out. They could just as easily burst out.
Lottie, coming along the zigzag path, was drawn to the sound of Mrs. Fisher's laughter. And impulsively, and without any sense of propriety, she bent over the back of Mrs. Fisher's chair and kissed her.
Oh, good gracious.
A queer little trickle of warmth crept through the frozen defences of Mrs. Fisher's heart.
So, Mr. Briggs, will you be staying here with us?
Oh, no, not at all. I'm actually on my way to Rome, but thought I'd just look in to see if you were comfortable. I'll be staying in a hotel at Mezzago tonight and we'll continue my journey tomorrow.
Of course you must stay here. It's your house. There's Kate Lumley's room. You wouldn't mind that, would you, Mrs. Fisher? After all, Kate Lumley isn't in it.
Oh, no. Fortunately, Kate Lumley is not in that room. She is an excessively wide person, and that room is excessively narrow. Kate Lumley might get into it, but once inside, she would fit so tightly that she might not be able to get out again. Oh, Mr. Briggs, the room is entirely at your disposal. You must certainly not go to an hotel.
Rose listened to this speech, wide-eyed with amazement. And then Lottie laughed, and bent down and kissed Mrs. Fisher again, several times.
So you see, my dear boy, you must stay here and give us all a great deal of pleasure.
A great deal indeed.
A very great deal.
Yes, please do.
How kind of you all. I'd love to be a guest here. What a new sensation. And with three such... Won't I have a fourth hostess?
Yes, Lady Caroline Dester.
Then hadn't we better find out first if she...
Briggs stopped dead at the sight of Scrap coming towards them, her fair hair shimmering like a halo under the bright sun. All she said was, how do you do? But it was enough. Briggs was undone. His eyes could not keep off the enchanting face for a moment.
Where are your things, Mr. Briggs? Oughtn't they be fetched?
My things? Yes. Yes, I must fetch them. They're in Mezzago.
We can easily send Domenico to fetch them.
It was a sad sight to see the collapse of Briggs. Everybody noticed it, even Rose. Upon my word, thought Mrs. Fisher, the way a pretty face can turn a delightful man into an idiot is past all patience. And Scrap, wanting nothing more than to go to her corner of the garden to smoke a cigarette and look at the sunset and the lights coming out one by one in the village below, decided instead to go to her room.
I
hope you're comfortable here.
I'm very comfortable. Thank you, Mr. Briggs.
Are you going upstairs?
Yes.
The drawing room or the small yellow room?
I'm going to my own room.
Oh, then I shan't see you again until dinner.
The dinner is at 8.
He watched as she turned the bend of the stairs, and the setting sun shining through the west window on her face turned her to glory. She disappeared, and the sun went out too, and the stairs were dark and empty. He listened till her footsteps were silent, then wandered aimlessly away back through the hall and out into the top garden. Scrap's melancholy intensified. Here she was, shut up in her bedroom, which was stuffy from the afternoon sun that had been pouring into it, instead of out in the cool garden, and all because of Mr. Briggs.
Only me? Can I come in?
Yes.
I was wondering why you left so quickly.
Can't you guess?
Poor man.
I came away here to try to be free of all that.
But you're forgetting something.
I am?
He'll be gone tomorrow. He's only staying here just for one night.
So he says. He might change his mind. He might go back to the hotel in Mezzago and stay there and come up here every day and I'll have to stay in hiding.
I'm sure he won't do that.
I hope he won't.
It's a shame he won't come out. It's a beautiful evening. Oh, he's down there now. Just underneath your window.
Scrap peered out of the window and saw him listening patiently to something Mr. Wilkins was telling him.
Your oleander. I heard that it sprang from your father's cherry wood walking stick.
Did it? Oh, yes.
It was Domenico who told me. He heard about it from his own father, who was the gardener then. You seem a little distracted. Are you looking for someone?
No. You were saying...
Domenico said your father thrust the stick in the ground and left it there, and afterwards the stick began to sprout and became an oleander. This very one we're looking at now. Remarkable. Quite remarkable. Don't you think?
Remarkable. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Poor Briggs must have heard this story many times from infancy and wasn't really listening. And Scrap, alone once more, felt she couldn't and wouldn't endure it. She would run downstairs, leave the house by the front door, and take cover in the shadows of the zigzag path. Nobody would see her there.
Oh, for goodness sake!
She turned her head and beheld, with astonishment, a person she had seen a good deal of lately in London. The well-known writer of amusing memoirs, Mr. Ferdinand Arundel.
What on earth?
Lady Droitwich told me where you were, and as I happened to be passing through on my way to Rome...
You too.
Excuse me?
Nothing.
Well, I thought I'd get out at Mezzago and just look in to see how you were.
My mother wasn't supposed to tell anyone where I am.
Scrap liked Ferdinand Arundel, or rather, she didn't dislike him.
Dinner is at 8. You must join us.
Will it be all right?
Certainly.
She was too lovely to be true, he thought.
I suppose you will be going on from Mezzago by the night train.
Or stay in Mezzago in an hotel and go on tomorrow. But tell me about yourself. London has been extraordinarily dull and empty. Lady Droitwich said you were here with people she didn't know. I hope they've been kind to you. Oh,
very kind. I got them out of an advertisement.
An advertisement?
It's a good way, I find, to get friends. I'm fonder of one of these than I've been of anybody for years.
Really? Who is it?
I'll let you guess when you see them. Tell me about Mother. How is she? When did you last see her? We arranged not to write to each other unless there was something special. I wanted to have a month that was perfectly blank.
And I've come and interrupted. I can't tell you how ashamed I am, both of having done it and of not being able to help it.
I'm really very glad indeed to see you.
Are you? Are you really?
Yes. Now tell me about Mother.
Well...
Ferdinand's humorous anecdotes about what Scrap's mother had said and not said, and done and not done, made her laugh and kept her amused even as it grew dark. And it was 7:45 before she suddenly remembered dinner.
Oh, good heavens! I must run. I have to get changed.
Rose was also thinking of dinner and went into the drawing room to wait by the fire. Then, all the blood in her body rushed to her heart and seemed to stop its beating. Someone was already in there looking out of the window. Frederick, she tried to say, but no sound came.
Frederick,
she whispered again.
Rose!
How quickly my letter got to you.
Your letter? Yes. Sweetheart. Sweetheart.
He was holding Rose to his heart, and it was all coming back to him at the touch of her. The feel of her face against his and her gentle kisses.
Oh, I say. I beg your pardon.
Mr. Briggs. This is my husband.
Good evening.
Mrs. Fisher. This is Frederick. My husband.
Oh.
Mrs. Fisher received him graciously.
Good evening.
Good evening.
He did look like a husband. Not like one of those people who go about abroad pretending they're husbands when they're not. This, thought Mrs. Fisher, must now be the last of the husbands, unless Lady Caroline produces one from up her sleeve. But Frederick Arbuthnot had not come in response to Rose's letter. He hadn't received it. He had come to see Scrap, who didn't know he was married. Frederick was known in London circles as Ferdinand Arundel, and had written under the name for so long he almost believed it himself. But the sudden shock of finding Rose here and embracing her made him forget all about the daughter of the Droitwiches.
Mr. Arbuthnot, you are Rose's husband.
I am, yes.
We haven't yet been introduced. I'm Mellish Wilkins, and this is my wife, Lottie.
We're so very glad to meet you, Mr. Arbuthnot.
Frederick, please.
Did I tell you, Rose?
Yes, Lottie, you did.
You must have come out by the same train as Mr. Briggs.
What's the matter with you, Mr. Briggs?
The matter with me? Nothing. Why do you ask?
You seem a little...
Before Mrs. Fisher could say the word fidgety, Briggs had leapt to his feet.
I'm sorry to be late.
You're always late, dear girl.
Scrap slid into the chair Briggs was holding for her.
Thank you.
While Frederick waited for the eruption that would surely follow.
Caroline, just fancy. Rose's husband has arrived. Isn't it wonderful? And me late, on your very first evening.
That evening was the evening of the full moon, and the garden was an enchanted place, where all the flowers seemed white and full of fragrance. The three young women sat on the low wall at the end of the top garden, Rose a little apart from the others, and watched the enormous moon move slowly over the place where Shelley had lived his last months. The sea quivered along the path of the moon, and the stars looked down, winking and trembling. Every now and then, Scrap's eyes lingered on Rose, and so did Lottie's.
Rose looks different.
Yes. Beautiful.
Yes.
Love.
Yes.
I can't think of anything else in the world that can work such wonders.
Nor I.
I suppose Rose's husband seems to you just an ordinary middle-aged man. Well, he isn't. Rose sees through all that. That's mere trimmings. She sees what we can't see because she loves him. This is our last week here, you know.
Yes.
How quickly our time has passed.
Oh. Are you cold?
A little. Here, put my wrap around your shoulders. Is that better?
Much. Thank you, Lottie. I think I'll just go for a walk.
Scrap had gone only a few yards when she met Frederick hurrying towards her.
Oh, I was determined to find you before I go to my dear Rose.
Frederick!
I adored you before because of your beauty. Now it's because when Lottie blurted out that I am Rose's husband, well, now I adore you because of your goodness in not giving me away. Bless you.
San Salvatore was working its magic. Even Scrap was happier than she'd been for ages. And she found herself thinking that it didn't seem right that poor young Mr. Briggs wasn't sharing in it too. She felt ashamed. Compunction laid its quick, warm hand on her, and she was flooded with an impulsive gratitude. Mr. Briggs, meanwhile, was coming out of the dining room with Mr. Wilkins, and pulling Lottie's wrap tightly about herself, she went up to him.
Mr. Briggs, I owe you so much.
You owe me?
I've had the loveliest time of my life, and it's all because of San Salvatore. It's all because of you.
Me? But it is I who has...
Please, for goodness sake, don't be humble. It's ridiculous of you to be humble.
Unwise, thought Mr. Wilkins. Lady Caroline needed an advisor, some objective counsellor like himself. There she was, standing before Briggs, almost holding out her hands to him.
It is most proper, Briggs, that you should be thanked. You will please allow me to add my expressions of indebtedness and those of my wife to Lady Caroline's. We ought to propose a vote of thanks to you at dinner.
Thank you.
Shall we go for a walk?
That would be lovely.
Mellash, I want to tell you something.
Presently.
No, now. Come away.
Well, what is it? I don't want to leave her with young Briggs like that. It's quite right she should wish to thank him, but she's leaving herself exposed to more annoyance.
Oh, but she isn't. Caroline is perfectly all right. Let's go indoors to the fire and find Mrs. Fisher. She's all by herself.
I can't leave her out there alone.
Don't be silly, Mellash. She isn't alone. Besides, I want to tell you something.
Well, tell me then.
Indoors.
We've come in.
Well, that's quite evident. Oh, dear, you're not going to kiss me again, are you?
I most certainly am.
Oh, dear Lily. Where are the others?
Rose and Frederick have gone into the lower garden to be alone. And so has Caroline, with Mr. Briggs. They wanted to be alone too.
But they've never set eyes on each other before today.
It's this magical place. It brought them together.
That last week, the syringa came out at San Salvatore, and all the acacias flowered. No one had noticed how many acacias there were, till one day the garden was full of a new scent, and the lovely successors to the wisteria hung all over their trembling leaves with blossom. To lie under an acacia tree that last week and look up through the branches at its frail leaves and white flowers quivering against the blue of the sky, while the least movement of the air shook down their scent, was a great happiness. Indeed, the whole garden dressed itself gradually in white and grew more and more scented. When, on the 1st of May, everybody went away, even after they had got to the bottom of the hill and passed through the iron gates out into the village, they could still smell the acacias.
In The Enchanted April by Elizabeth von Arnim, dramatised by Vivian Allen, Lottie was played by Pippa Nixon and Rose by Lindsay Marshall. Mrs. Fisher was Joanna Munro, Scrap, Rhiannon Needs, and Mellash, Stephen Critchlow. Frederick and Domenico were played by Chris Pavlow, Mr. Briggs by Neet Mohan, Francesca, Jessica Turner, and the narrator was Jenny Funnell. The Enchanted April was directed by Tracy Neal.
If you'd like to receive our newsletter with full details of the week's radio dramas, just search for BBC Radio Drama Newsletter.